Welcome into the Ether, a podcast focusing on all things Ethereum, the leading blockchain for decentralized applications. I'm Eric Connor, your host and founder of ETHub, a decentralized information hub for Ethereum. Into the Ether features deep dives on topics with prominent guests in the community, as well as ETHub weekly recaps featuring Anthony Sassano. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ETHub weekly recap. On these episodes, we discuss the latest news from the Ethereum ecosystem and crypto space as a whole. This week, we are discussing the news from May 13th to May 19th. Hey, Anthony, you want to walk us through the news?
Hey, Eric. Sure. So I think we should start with a recap of Blockchain Week. Now, I'd give the recap, but I wasn't there. But you were there for at least half of it, Eric. So did you want to walk through your experience during the week?
Yeah, definitely. It was an awesome time. I guess I got to New York Wednesday off a red eye, so I was nice and tired and coming off no sleep. Kind of took it a little bit easy that day. And then Thursday went to Token Summit, which I had never been to in the past, but it's been going like 4 or 5 years now. In general, it was a really good conference. I mean, one thing I found interesting is I can't comment too much on the past, but it seemed like not too much focus on like tokens themselves, which I guess makes a little bit of sense these days. But they had more just kind of really interesting panels just in general, like the one I was kind of most interested in, I guess, which probably won't surprise the listeners, is the governance panel, which had Kevin from Gitcoin and Lane Reddid and Amin Soleimani on it. So of course, you know, Kevin actually brought popcorn on stage and was eating it as they were going through the panel. But no, it turned out there was a team member from Cosmos there as well. And one of the most interesting takeaways I took from it is it turned into like an on-chain versus off-chain governance debate. And it was kind of nice to see Lane speak up and say, you know, he's not for, which we both fully agree with him, he's not for any kind of on-chain governance ever at the protocol level on Ethereum and how it delves into plutocracy. And then it kind of turned into a debate of kind of the Ethereum versus Cosmos, or I would say slash all other competitor governance systems. And just kind of nice to see, you know, people that have been around Ethereum forever kind of cement what we've been saying. And we don't think that on-chain governance is a solution for the future, and all these other chains can kind of mess with it if they want to do that. So that was Token Summit. And then, I mean, I would say probably the highlight of my week was ETH New York, which I was there Saturday and Sunday. It was just great to see everyone. I mean, as people met me, like I haven't gone to many conferences, even though I've been talking to so many people online for 4 or 5 years now. And so it's great to put faces to names. It's funny to kind of run into people. You're like, you look like your Twitter picture. I think you're this person. I hope you are. And I'm not awkwardly introducing myself, but I guess there was just so much passion and energy. I think you probably saw that at EdCon as well. And you mentioned it a few weeks back, but I mean, you get kind of sucked into this, right? There's like 500 people there hacking away, and people are walking around and talking to people, and everyone knows each other. It's just a great energy. But, you know, there were a lot of people hacking away at things. And one of my biggest takeaways was people are kind of like asking, like, where do we go next, right? Like, I still think we, at this point, are going to keep focusing on DeFi. And it seems to be that most people agree with that in the short term, but you're kind of starting to see people really wonder like how we're going to capture mass use cases, right? That's one of the bigger takeaways I got from the event, which to me was good to see. So like, how do we start to capture mass users? And it's not really just the use cases that we can put out there, but you know, onboarding and privacy and like better UX. That's the thing that I hear people talking about. And then other than that was just, you know, I'm sure if I went to ETH New York maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, a lot of people were kind of talking about their ICOs and tokens. And this year there was a huge focus on layer two. So, you know, there's like 8 or 9 layer two teams, I think, that were represented or had a booth at ETH New York. So it's interesting to kind of see that shift from, you know, token sales to scalability, which is obviously extremely important. But overall, I mean, at the end of the day, it was just great to finally meet a lot of people in person that I had never put a face to a name before.
Yeah, I was sitting on Twitter just watching it all happen. And one thing I do love about the conferences, especially like, and not just the Ethereum conferences, but like all of them in general, is that people still sit on Twitter and, you know, tweet out things, put pictures up and everything like that. So it's really easy for kind of someone like me to follow along who doesn't get to go to many of these conferences. So it was really awesome to just sit on the sidelines and watch. And, you know, as you said, your experience is similar to mine, where it's kind of an atmosphere when you go there, especially in the Ethereum conferences. You don't actually kind of understand it until you go to one of them. The atmosphere is just so positive. And, you know, even during a bear market, you know, when I went to EdCon, the price wasn't really moving up like it has been over the past few weeks, but people were still extremely excited. There was no kind of sadness or bearishness from people on the tech side, I guess. And I think that kind of shines a light onto, you know, reasons people might be into crypto. Like, there are some kind of businessy finance conferences where people go and it's all about that kind of money and stuff like that, which is fine. But from my experience, well, my limited experience, and just hearing others talk about it as well, the Ethereum conferences are more about the community and building and hacking and all that sort of stuff. And I guess that's the stuff that we're both more interested in as well. So yeah, for anyone who wants to attend a conference, I definitely suggest going to one of the more developer focused ones, because people will still talk about the money, the finance side of it and things like that, but it'll be more in the context of the technology, not just, you know, how much money can we make from this, or, you know, what pre-sales are happening, you know, what token sales are happening, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, but I'm glad to hear you had a really good time there, Eric. Hopefully I can be at the next one. We'll both definitely be at DevCon, of course, but another one that I'm trying to go to is DapCon or 8th Berlin, or that whole Berlin blockchain week, but that's pending a few things. it's very far away from where I live, so we'll see how we go with that one. So moving on from that, we did a little thing on ETHUB over the past couple of weeks that we wanted to do for a kind of a little while. We had some branding made around the Built on Ethereum kind of moniker, because we see this often on social media, is that people will say they've got an app out there, you know, and then they'll say what it does and everything, but it'll be missing that kind of Built on Ethereum where they can show off the fact that, hey, you know, our product's built on Ethereum, which means you automatically have access to the rest of the Ethereum ecosystem. We're interoperable with Ethereum. We're based on the biggest platform for smart contracts and everything like that. So we had this branding kit stood up. I think DC Investor and a few other people kind of led the charge here to get that set up. So that's on the ETHUB website. You can go check it out under the other section. And we do encourage any dApp developers or you know, people in general building anything with Ethereum or on top of Ethereum to kind of look at this branding and consider adding it to their website, just to let people know that you're built on Ethereum. Same way, I guess, Intel puts like Intel Inside stickers on computers and things like that. It becomes like a trusted brand that people can look at as a sign of quality, or as a sign of, oh, hey, I know Intel, or I know Ethereum, like, you know, and trust the product or service more just because of that. Like, you know, for me personally, if I saw Built on Tron, I wouldn't trust it. I wouldn't use it myself. So yeah, it definitely separates the kind of quality from, you know, the less quality projects.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things we've always done is just like get content out, right? So like, this isn't a final version by any means, but I feel we felt that people were far enough away to kind of put the original version out there. And, you know, we set up the page where this isn't the only thing that could be built for this too, right? Like, this could turn into like a branding kit type of thing, right? And Built on Ethereum is just kind of the first one. So hopefully people either iterate on this one if they don't like it and add more colors or whatever it might be, but even go beyond just Built on Ethereum.
Yeah, exactly. We do encourage everyone to, you know, the source files are there on our GitHub page. So we do encourage any graphic designers to get involved if they, you know, feel like volunteering or submitting some of their work to ETHUB, because they're not, yeah, as you said, they're not final. So yeah, we look for people to improve them on, because we're not graphic designers at the end of the day. I think they were put together by Textra on Twitter. And, you know, they're pretty good for what they are at the end of the day. I think they're quite nice, but there's a lot more branding work to do around it in general. Right, on to the news. So there was actually a slow news week this week. I think just because of all the blockchain week stuff that was happening, no one really wanted to put out any kind of major announcements. I covered up a few of them in the last kind of, you know, last week in the last newsletter. But yeah, so this week we had Facebook registering their kind of stablecoin project in Switzerland. So as we've mentioned on the podcast before, it's codenamed Libra or Libra or something like that. So they've registered this entity in Switzerland, still being very secretive about it. And we don't really know still what it is. They registered it with the description that the company will provide financial and technology services and develop related hardware and software. So it's so like ambiguous. I mean, that could mean anything, right? We do know it's a stablecoin project, but we just still don't have any details about this. And they also recently announced that they hired two former Coinbase compliance managers as well. So they're obviously tapping into the existing crypto or blockchain pool, talent pool, to try and get the best people working on their product. I do think that when Facebook does something, it goes very kind of hard into it. They've done this thing before where they've copied other products, but then marketed it heavily. And because they have the user base, they can automatically get it in the hands of, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of people. We saw this happen with Facebook Messenger and Facebook in general, where they added stories to WhatsApp and Facebook just to combat Snapchat stories. And they had also added it to Instagram, of course, which Facebook owns. And that pretty much killed most of Snapchat's user base, because a lot of people just use Instagram, because there was a lot of overlap between Snapchat and Instagram's users, where, you know, the same kind of people use the services. So why not have it all in one app? So we might see Facebook come in with this stablecoin and start killing off a lot of these other fiat-backed stablecoins like GUSD or CircleUSD or anything like that. Obviously, I guess we both don't consider this a threat to anything like DAI, because I don't think this is going to be a decentralized stablecoin system. Maybe, you know, at least not at first. Maybe it eventually is, but it definitely seems the clear path here would be to go to a fiat-backed model.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I if it's a competitor to GUSD or USDC, I guess it's kind of fine to me. Like, I don't really... Those are both kind of whatever to me. I agree with you. I think that's where they're going to try and take the market. I mean, there's definitely a big like long-term play financially to become like the go-to centralized stablecoin, right? Because as we've talked in the past, like they can turn these deposits around and make interest on them and, you know, eventually probably run fractional reserves and all that, just like Tether. I mean, it's all in the terms of service. So I wouldn't put anything like that past Facebook. I'm still just interested. Like, I'm just ready for this to launch, right? I can't imagine. I mean, going back to like Blockchain Week in New York, there's no passion really for like centralized companies launching crypto, right? I just don't see how they're going to get much fanfare here. So be in the current crypto group. So my guess is their play is going to be more to, you know, more mainstream people who maybe haven't used it yet and would feel decently comfortable entering the crypto space using a Facebook coin, right? Which is totally fine too. So like we've said, I mean, in general, this is probably okay for adoption, but I'm still not that interested in it. I'm just ready for it to finally like come to fruition and at least put some news out about it.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so many rumors. It's kind of getting annoying, I guess, at the same time. But as you said, yeah, it's probably going to compete with Gemini and Coinbase and all that kind of stuff. I definitely think that it's just going to be some kind of payment system integrated into all of Facebook's apps, like WhatsApp and Instagram and all that. And it'll just be abstracted away completely from kind of the end user. You might even just deposit it with like a debit card or a bank transfer or something and get like Facebook bucks or something, or Zuck bucks as they've been called. And, you know, the blockchain aspect of it, as we've discussed in the past, we still have no idea how they're going to be using, you know, I guess, blockchain tech to enhance this, or why this is even, you know, why a blockchain tech is even needed for something like this, where, you know, there's been tons of different services using points and loyalty points and things like that, and their own currencies. Like, there's a lot of, I guess, from my background, there's a lot of video game shops that use kind of currencies, their own currency. So you can just like buy $100 worth of Steam dollars or something like that. So I don't know why Facebook wouldn't do something like that. Or maybe they're just using blockchain crypto as like a marketing thing. Yeah, who knows? I mean, it's all speculation at this point. So we'll see what happens in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm kind of thinking they're spending so much time and effort and money on this. I would think that it's going to be almost bigger than a stablecoin at this point. If it's just a stablecoin, it's going to be a pretty lame letdown. I mean, I kind of think they might be trying something bigger, but who knows? I mean, if it's just, like you said, like, what's the point of even using it's like blockchain, all the things. If it's just like a currency inside of their apps, right? Why not just do it through traditional banking? So it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, I think actually we did discuss there was a rumor around them creating a payments network, not just a stablecoin. But, you know, as I said, we have no idea what this payment network is going to be. Is it going to be on the main chain, like depending if it's Ethereum or another chain? Or is it going to be a private kind of blockchain? Or is it just going to be SQL database? Who knows, right? I just really want to know where blockchain fits into all this, all of their plans, basically. All right, moving on from that, there's a few project updates from this week. So the EIPs for Istanbul, the next Ethereum network upgrade, have been finalized this week. So the drafts, not the ones that are actually going into Istanbul, but kind of like the proposed ones were finalized. So I think there's a total of 16 at the moment. Two ones stuck out to me here. So there's EIP 1559, which is obviously your fee market change, Eric, that we've spoken about in the past, and also EIP 1057, which is the infamous ProgPal proposal. Now, both of these aren't guaranteed to go in, of course. I think I've been hearing or reading some things about 1559 or the fee market one, that it's the scope of this is quite large, so it might not make it into Istanbul as much as we want it to. ProgPal is still pending the audit of the code before we even consider putting it in. You know, ProgPal is obviously, people are familiar with ProgPal and all the debate around and why we would or wouldn't want it. I'm still neutral on this. I'm leaning towards, personally, I'm leaning more towards not wanting it just because I don't think it's critical at this point in time, but there is definitely arguments for and against, and I'm not sure what's going to happen once the audit is done and then it's decided that, okay, it's safe to put in. Is the community going to start firing up again about this and thinking, oh, you know, I thought, because the conversation died down, right? But nothing ever, there wasn't a decision made. It was basically, let's just wait for the audit and then we can discuss whether it goes in or not. I don't know if anything's going to, you know, have changed just because the code is sound and just because there's no back doors. I think most of the concerns revolved around, is this really necessary, to go in? Do we actually need this sort of thing?
I mean, I guess first the fee market, the EIPs in general. So kind of had the deadline here and they were submitted. I will say So I had an interesting, one thing I forgot to mention about ETH New York was there was a Moloch member meetup on Wednesday, and this was kind of the first time we all got together in person. It was really great. We talked for 3 hours about, you know, what our vision is and how to fix our process. Oh, not fix, but establish a process and, you know, how to be efficient, right? And gain new members and how to put all these funds to use. As a part of that, I was talking to Mariano, who is a developer at MakerDAO, and we were talking about how we thought a good use of funds potentially could be to kind of fund EIPs. So it's kind of, to me, it's like a, you know, low investment, high reward, right? And that's kind of what we're looking for with Moloch right now. So we were talking about EIPs that maybe need some funding as far as like testing and specing goes, or just manpower goes, that we could help fund those potentially through Moloch. So I guess long story short, I'm having a call with him and Boris this week, and we're going to discuss that a little bit. So hopefully, to your comment about the fee market maybe not getting in, we can help push that over the finish line with some more manpower and funding behind it. And then, yeah, we get to ProgPal, which I don't even know. We're like at the depths of how governance works at this point, right? Like, I guess if the audit comes back fully clean, it's kind of whatever to me, right? I'm a bit indifferent. Like, I feel like we're going to kill ourselves with debates over governance here over a potential small change in the long run. I do think we're, like, if I had a personal vote on it, I would say no, but am I going to lose sleep over it? If the audit comes back clean, no. I think we're chasing a fool's errand here. I think ASICs are going to be figured out no matter what in the long run. But anyways, I guess the key here is this is the most formalized I've seen the EIP process as far as like deadlines and getting into forks. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out around testing and all that. And, you know, if Moloch can do anything, of course, we have to put proposals together and it has to be voted on by all the members. But hopefully we can help leverage our funds here a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear then. I know there was a bit of concern about funding for the fee market change. So it's really great to see that, you know, there's possibly a path forward there to get this into Istanbul, because it's definitely a major upgrade. For those who don't know about it, definitely go visit Eric's Medium blog, and he's got the post up there of introducing it and what it is, or you can just Google EIP-1559 and you should be able to find it like that as well. But yeah, I'm with you on kind of Prog Pal, where I think ASICs are going to happen no matter what, and I don't think we should be, you know, focusing too much on kind of mining in general, considering that we're going to obviously migrate to ETH 2.0 eventually. We do need ETH 1 chain, or the current Ethereum chain, to survive for quite a while and to keep chugging along. But there are other improvements that we can make there. Obviously, we have ETH 1.x happening. We have a major upgrade actually coming, where the beacon chain, the ETH 2.0 beacon chain, can actually checkpoint the ETH 1.x chain, or the ETH 1 chain, which means that we won't need nearly as much hash power as we have now, which means we can reduce the block rewards as well considerably. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of moving parts going on, and it really just depends on what gets developed and spec'd out and funded and all that sort of stuff. So I guess for now, you know, as you said, if the Prog Pal audit comes back clean, I'm not going to lose sleep over it if it goes in. But I really do hope that the community isn't fragmented over something like this, because there are more important issues that we're going to have to kind of be united against coming up. You know, there's a whole bunch of stuff. Like, there's always unforeseen circumstances as well. So yeah, I don't think we're going to see like a community split over Prog Pal, to be honest, just because it's not something to split the community over. But there will definitely be some upset members of the community, especially miners and things like that. So we'll see what happens. All right, on to the next thing. So this week, a new game from Dapper Labs was released. They've been teasing this for a while. It's called Cheese Wizards. Now, this is quite funny because Dapper Labs is the people behind CryptoKitties. So obviously, everyone knows that CryptoKitties blew up in 2017. And kind of caused the network to get congested a fair bit. And, you know, to all the Ethereum haters out there, they love to use it as a kind of fighting point for Ethereum, that the CryptoKitties broke Ethereum. But yeah, so this new game is basically based on Ethereum blockchain as well, of course, but it's less kind of feverish now, especially because the bull market isn't around and it doesn't require you to keep spamming the network to breed cats. So the way it works is that you can buy cheese wizards or summon cheese wizards with ETH. These cheese wizards have a power level, and then for every cheese wizard that's bought, it gets more expensive as time goes on. And half of the proceeds of sales of the summons of the cheese wizards goes towards a tournament pool. So yeah, we're currently in the first phase. So the first week is when people can summon wizards. And then the second phase will be when people can start dueling each other. So the dueling mechanics is basically a rock, paper, scissors mechanic, where you'll fight against other wizards, and depending on the kind of elemental aspect of your wizard, so if you're fire, wind, or water, you know, there's different weaknesses. So you will win based on if you cast a fire spell against, cast a water spell against someone that's a fire wizard or something like that. So, or you cast a wind spell against fire. You know, there's different weaknesses there. So it's funny because the game itself is cool, and all the graphics and marketing around it are really cool. But I think that the mechanics are, I guess, very pay to win, because the later you buy a wizard, you know, the more expensive it is, the more power you start with. So you've actually got an advantage over the people who bought earlier, which it's a bit funny when you think about it. It's like it encourages people to wait to buy, but then if you wait to buy, it's going to be much more expensive for you to buy a wizard. So, you know, I'm curious to see how the dueling goes, because with the dueling, you can actually level up your wizard's power, but there's not much details around that yet. I think it's going live in about 3 days, so we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, the ETH prize is up to, I think, almost 400 ETH now. So if you actually win the tournament, you win 400 ETH, which isn't, you know, anything to scoff at. I think that's a fair bit of money. What is it off the top of my head? It's you know, at least tens of thousands of dollars at the moment. So yeah, curious to see how, you know, how the longevity of this game as well, because as we know, a lot of blockchain games, they get really popular and then obviously they die off. We saw that with CryptoKitties, but CryptoKitties is still pretty active. It's still one of the most used smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain as well. So yeah, I know you probably missed this whole thing because of Blockchain Week, Eric, but did you have any thoughts around Cheese Wizards?
I can't say specifically no, and I'll be honest, the one thing I'm way behind on is the gaming side, like, which sounds weird because I'm actually really bullish on the idea of gaming on Ethereum and like in-game assets and NFTs. I think it's going to be huge, but I did see the Dapper Labs people at ETH New York. They had a cool little booth set up, but you know, I mean, they crushed it with CryptoKitties, right? So, and they have this 400 Ether prize. Like, I'm sure it's going to be huge. Like, I don't see it. Seems memeable to me. Like, I read their initial blog post, and to be honest, I was kind of like, what the fuck is actually going on here? Like, you know, combining all these, I don't know. It was just confusing. Like, that's one thing. This is memeable in the crypto community, but it's just complex, and I'm not sure if it's going to go beyond that. I kind of feel like that with CryptoKitties, right? I'm waiting for like the first mainstream game. Maybe I'm totally wrong here, and this will hit that, but just from kind of like trying to read about it and the title of it and how it all works, I just don't see it going beyond crypto, like the crypto community. I think that like the card games that are being built out for a while, like Gods Unchained or something like that, potentially have, you know, bigger potential, but hopefully they prove me wrong.
It's funny you mention that you're bullish on crypto gaming in general, and you don't really pay attention though in general. I remember you did pay attention when there was the MLB crypto stuff because you're a big sports fan. Whereas like for someone like me, I'm not really into sports, but I am into gaming. So I pay attention to a lot of the crypto gaming. But you know, I remember, yeah, when MLB crypto came out, you went nuts over it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's a good way to put it though. Like, we all have our different interests in games, right? And like what we focus on or like our passions. You know, I think the MLB crypto, I got excited because I could see that going mainstream. I think, you know, it's fine to have these like more memeable, like in community games, which I'm sure that's kind of how it all starts. And eventually one will catch fire, right? And, you know, none of this is meant to be like a knock on anybody building these games. I just, to be completely honest, like I used to be a gamer and I'm just kind of out of the scene in the last few years. But, you know, I definitely, MLB crypto kind of struck a chord in my heart because I used to collect cards and stuff growing up, like baseball cards and hockey cards. To me, that's what would like capture mainstream, right? Like people still like collectibles and sports and like how to use those in games. I think that'll be one of the bigger first hits.
Well, yeah, exactly. Taking those kind of real life communities and, you know, existing communities and porting them to blockchain is probably the most bullish part of the crypto gaming scene. I think Gods Unchained is doing it very well, kind of capturing that TCG or trading card game market from, you know, Magic the Gathering to Hearthstone to any of the other ones that have been out over the years. So we should see more people from outside the crypto space kind of getting into it through games. But yeah, as you said, we need that more mainstream appeal. We need to abstract away a lot of the complexities. We still need, like, I still think that like when you're summoning a wizard, you use MetaMask, right? But you can use Dapper Labs' own wallet as well, which is, I think, more user-friendly, which is cool. But I still think we need to get to a point where it's even less complex than that. Like, I don't know how we do it. It's not up to, obviously, me. It's up to the UX and kind of UI designers and all the, you know, user experience people. But I think that we can get to a point where it's as easy as it is now with, you know, apps on people's phones where they don't even think about this stuff. It's just second nature to them.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree with that. I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, I even think like the winning solution here is going to be, you know, mainstream gaming companies, like you said, you're just using it, but then like the actual in-game assets are owned on chain and they're transferable and sellable and all that. Like that's to me the ultimate end goal. I mean, it's great to see like all the indie games kind of pop up, and I know they're very popular these days and maybe one will take off, but I guess where I'm personally very bullish is more just, you know, mainstream games using the technology underneath.
Yeah, I can't wait for a big company like, I guess, Blizzard, Activision, EA, or Valve, or any of the big video game companies to come out with something that's based on crypto and to see what kind of spin they put on it. But I think that's still years out. I think we're still too niche with the infrastructure's not there. There hasn't been that kind of killer app to encourage these companies to get involved. I'm sure that that's on their radar in some way or another, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see. All right, last project update for the week. So this came out of kind of nowhere for me this week. I don't know about you, Eric, but So basically, there was a press release about major retailers like Whole Foods and Nordstrom and a few other big retailers in the United States accepting crypto through what's called the Spendin app. So spend with a D and the N flipped around. I really hate how, you know, everything's going to, you know, Buildle and Hodl and Spendin. And just stop. Like, this is not how you get mainstream acceptance, by confusing people with these weird words. But anyway, moving on from that, they basically partnered with Gemini, this kind of Flexer network, and the Spendin app lets you spend ETH, BTC, and BCH at all those different retailers. And I think you can use USDC as well, or GUSD, Gemini stablecoin as well, or it's planned to be able to be used at some point. And Flexer also has their own ERC20 token on Ethereum. I'm not sure what for at all, to be honest. But yeah, this kind of came out of nowhere. Did you, like, while you're at Blockchain Week, did you hear people talking about this?
So actually, no. I guess maybe I'm a little tainted. I got there Wednesday, and I think the news came out earlier in the week. So I think people were talking about it at the CoinDesk, the consensus conference and all that. But I actually didn't hear a peep about it, which maybe is a bad omen, or maybe just, I don't know, I just didn't hear people talking about it. But first of all, I fully agree with you. Can we please stop with the Buildle and Spendin? And like, this is like, when are we finally going to turn the corner where we need to like bring on new users and quit with all these stupid names, right? Like, we have the worst marketing in this space. Like, this is not helping. I mean, this is cool. I mean, there's all these kind of, you know, debit card, credit card launching companies and how to spend your crypto. And this seems like a company that really has it figured out as far as like the platform and actually using crypto goes. I just personally can't get excited about it being a US citizen when there's no tax guidance around spending crypto, right? So as far as I understand it, and as far as most people understand IRS rules right now, if I were to go spend my Ether, I have to pay capital gains on that. So I'm assuming the merchant is obviously transitioning that or putting that into USD immediately. So I'm essentially paying them in USD. So I'm converting my crypto over. That's technically a sale. So, you know, I'm not going to go be excited about this. I can't even say it. Spendin, whatever the hell it is. I can't get excited about this if I need to pay 40% or, you know, whatever, 25, 30% on my crypto. You know, I joked on Twitter, hey, I just bought this latte and I paid 30% over premium for it. Like, so, I mean, that's a flaw of the US government and not putting out regulations yet for us to really understand. But I can't imagine that's really going to be cleared up or changed, you know, in the coming years.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one big issue. And another issue is obviously that no one really wants to spend their crypto. Like, this is why I guess we've got stable coins, especially something like Maker, where you can put in ETH, get DAI, and then spend that DAI without losing out on your ETH. You obviously have to pay it back eventually, but you know, if your ETH price rises, you can pull ETH out of your CDP and sell it for DAI and pay it back that way. So, you know, it is a risk, but you get to kind of have the benefits of not selling your ETH there. I'm not sure how that's treated in kind of the tax guidance at all. I have no idea. Like, I don't even know how it works in Australia, let alone the US. But yeah, there's so much confusion around that. So I'm not sure that this app is going to actually get much use for those reasons, but we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I've never been sold on the payments kind of use case using ETH or BTC. I've always been quite bullish on it being used with stablecoins, of course, because it just makes a lot more sense. But payments in general, I don't think that's something that a lot of people are interested in doing with crypto at the moment, just because it's harder, as you said, for tax reasons, or it's there's more friction there than just using their everyday money or, you know, cash or whatever. So yeah, I think we'll see that eventually. Maybe if these things become global money, like if BTC or if ETH becomes global money, maybe that's going to trigger a few people, maybe me calling ETH money. But anyway, you know, maybe we'll see this, see if we'll spend their crypto more. You know, there's always these stories about someone spending 10,000 Bitcoin on a pizza. Like, you know, that's the classic story, right? Where it's worth like, you know, $100 million today or whatever. But, you know, I think a lot of people are actually thinking about that these days, being like, oh, if I spend it now, what if it goes 10 times from here? I'm losing 10 times the money, plus I'm paying capital gains tax already. There's just a whole host of reasons why I don't think the payments use case takes off in the meantime, unless it's a stablecoin system or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to people at ETH New York about this, and you know, Bitcoin has a lot of people, a lot of merchants that will accept it. And I agree. I think we're 5 to 10 years away at a minimum of multiple merchants, or you know, normal merchants that you go to every day just accepting crypto. I mean, obviously, we talk about ETH as money. I think it'll get there. Right now, it's more just inside the ecosystem and being accepted there. And you know, eventually. Yeah, the ideal case is not that people accept crypto and convert it right to USD, right? I mean, that's kind of what, it's just a tax burden more than anything and silly. I mean, I think the ultimate goal is they actually accept crypto and hold on to it, right? That's kind of like when we finally made it.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be, I guess, a lot more stable for that. So we'll see. All right, moving on to on-chain activity. So there wasn't actually something specific I wanted to talk about this week with regards to on-chain activity. It was more about on-chain metrics in general. So I see a lot of comparisons on Twitter about kind of fees paid between networks, and it kind of struck a chord with me because I'm just like, it doesn't make much sense when you take these kind of single metrics and look at them without looking at the kind of network as a whole. So if you were to take fees paid, for example, a lot of Bitcoiners use this as a way to say people are paying more for Bitcoin block space because it's more valuable or whatever kind of stuff that they want to say. And, you know, there is an argument to be made there, and I understand that. But then they compare it to something like Ethereum, where the fees are lower because of the fact that the Ethereum network can process more transactions than Bitcoin can process. Like, that's a simple fact of it. I do actually believe that Ethereum was had the same transactions per second as Bitcoin, we would see the same amount of fees being paid on Ethereum. But, you know, there's also the difference in kind of fee markets. Like the Ethereum has the gas kind of model, and Bitcoin just has normal, you know, pay fees with Satoshis, basically. So it's kind of an apples to oranges comparison there. I don't think you can compare those two metrics and say, okay, Bitcoin's being, you know, used more, Bitcoin is better, you know, has more economic activity, or Bitcoin has more of this just from the fees alone. And you know, and the same kind of stuff happens with active addresses. I was actually looking at this today, and I mentioned it to you before. I need to confirm this, but my current suspicion around active addresses within UTXO blockchain, so something like Bitcoin and Litecoin, is that the metrics count the extra addresses that are generated because of this. So whenever you send a Bitcoin transaction, it's actually multiple addresses. So you'll send Bitcoin to an address, and then the change will come back to another address. And while it's a good at aggregating these, so you only see the kind of the one address yourself, and you always have the same address, but there's actually multiple transactions between multiple addresses, interacting for that transaction. So I think that kind of inflates the active addresses on Bitcoin, whereas on Ethereum, it's an account-based system. So you only have that one address when you're sending to and from other people. So I think that that metric as well is very hard to compare. Like, I know I'm mentioning Bitcoin and Ethereum a lot, but if you look at the other networks, it's the same kind of stuff. Like, obviously, Litecoin and Dogecoin and things like that are forks of Bitcoin. So they use the same model. Ethereum Classic is a fork of Ethereum, so it uses the same model as well. And my hypothesis around the active addresses actually falls down to, I looked at Doge. Doge has, I think, 1/3 of the active addresses of Ethereum, which makes zero sense, because we all know that Doge is literally just a speculator's coin. It's used for nothing else. Like, no one's using it for anything except speculation. So it makes no sense that it would have 1/3 of the active addresses of Ethereum, unless the active addresses are being inflated because of the fact that Doge uses a UTXO model. So I'm waiting for confirmation on that. So don't take anything I've said as kind of gospel there, but I'm curious if this is the fact that kind of blows the notion away that Bitcoin is, I think Bitcoin's like 3 or 4 times the active addresses of Ethereum, which still doesn't make sense to me, because a lot of what you could do with Bitcoin right now is just speculation as well. We know with Ethereum, there's speculation, but at least people are using it for different things, whether it's crypto games or DeFi apps or registering ENS or something like that, right? So it doesn't actually make sense that Ethereum's active addresses are that much lower than Bitcoin, considering the amount of activity that we see using other metrics like, you know, locked in DeFi and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a topic I'm extremely interested in. I've been thinking about for a long time. And I guess I'll caveat this with saying we're going to have the Coin Metrics team on in about 4 weeks. So, you know, any kind of questions people have listening to this, or, you know, you were just bringing the UTXO stuff up, we can ask them about. But I fully agree with you. I don't think it's going to be beneficial at all in the long run to compare, you know, metrics across chains. So the perfect example is transaction count, right? on Ethereum, that doesn't really matter that much. What really matters is how much gas is being used, because, you know, transactions can have different costs. Like the cheapest transaction is just simple SYN. It's 2100 gas. You know, to interact with a contract could take, you know, 200,000 gas. Well, those transactions are equal on a graph, but actually people are paying more to do the contract calls, right? And like what you should actually measure the Ethereum blockchain usage in is gas used per day, not transaction count. So you kind of look at like transactions across chains, it makes no sense, right? We have these like pseudo decentralized exchanges and like EOS, and where, you know, you can do a lot more transactions, but you're giving up on the centralization aspect of its stuff. So I don't think there's much value in the long run in these data sites, these sites that are comparing all these chains against one another. I think it's going to be more just like comparing your chain, your personal favorite chain over time, like against the past. Like to me, that's what's the most valuable. Like, is Ethereum spending the most? I think just today it was the most gas Ethereum has ever spent in a day or something like that. I believe Vitalik tweeted that out. I didn't have my Twitter for a while because I hadn't watched the Game of Thrones finale, and I had to delete Twitter because it would have got ruined. But so I'm catching up in the last like 30 hours of news. But and speaking of that, I'm sure people are wondering why my mic is shit, but my flight was canceled and all this good stuff, so I'm using my MacBook laptop. But anyways, you know, I think it doesn't make sense to compare across chains. I would more be interested in, know, these apps popping up like DeFi Pulse and all this stuff, where how are we doing versus like yesterday, and how are the on-chain apps and how are all these things doing compared to in the past, and not so much like Ethereum versus EOS or Ethereum versus Bitcoin and stuff like that.
Yeah, I totally agree there. I do know that Coinmetrics is coming out with a lot more tools, some paid, some free, that will go a lot deeper into various metrics of specific blockchains. And, you know, they'll also explain their methodology around it too, so you can actually know if they're, you know, for example, counting, active addresses in a certain way for UTXO blockchains as opposed to account-based and things like that. So I'm looking forward to having them on the podcast. And as you said, Eric, if anyone's got questions for them, please do reach out to us and then we can ask them on the podcast. All right, last thing I wanted to talk about this week was an excellent thread from the co-founder and CEO of Set Protocol, actually, Felix Feng. This thread, oh, I love it. He basically, like, I'll give you the TLDR. It was basically explaining how Ethereum is so ahead of every other chain in infrastructure for dApp developers. I think how many tweets is there? There's like six or seven tweets. So that obviously the thread's linked in the newsletter, but he basically says that he gets asked a lot why Set Protocol isn't developing on other chains like Tezos and Tron. And he goes on to say that the existing infrastructure for Ethereum for developers, you know, things like MetaMask, Infura, Truffle Suite, which is like a developer suite, is second to none. There is no competition that's even close yet. There is nothing as vibrant as the Ethereum developer community. You have other projects on Ethereum already that which enable the interoperability between Set and something like MakerDAO and Augur and things like that. You have some of the best engineering teams in the space building on Ethereum or building with Ethereum. You have the DEX infrastructure already there for something like Set Protocol. There's just a whole bunch of things that he mentions. And I love this thread because it's literally what we talk about all the time, whether it's on Twitter or on the podcast or anywhere. We say network effects are king. You cannot beat network effects by just bootstrapping your chain and saying, hey, we have more scalability, or hey, we have better tooling. You know, that's all hogwash, because no one's going to care unless you have the network effects, the existing network effects there. And that's why I guess we're both so bullish on Ethereum in general, and why we think that competitors are going to have a very, very hard time catching up to Ethereum simply because the network effects are so large. Like, you know, people may argue that Bitcoin was around for 5 years before Ethereum, and, you know, it does have more network effects than Ethereum, but Bitcoin is completely different. Bitcoin is not a smart contract platform. So comparing the two is not a good idea, in my opinion. And we just discussed how comparing the two for other reasons is immature. But comparing Ethereum to other smart contract blockchains makes a lot of sense. And that's what Felix did. And I am going to literally quote tweet this thread to everyone who says, why not just build on this chain?
Yeah, it's really funny. I had a ton of conversations in New York, either on both sides of this. So the first were people kept asking me, you know, do you think a competitor is going to come along and potentially eat Ethereum's lunch? My response to that is always no, because I think, first of all, you could have the best tech doesn't always win, right? Ethereum has this network effect, like you just mentioned, and this very large head start. And, you know, the flip side of that, or not the flip side, but the other part of that conversation I had with a lot of developers is I asked them, why do you work on Ethereum, or have you tried other chains and why aren't you working on them? And every single one I asked was basically exactly what this thread says. It's just that, you know, I went to their website and I tried to learn it. You know, Tezos is one example I heard a lot. I tried to go there to the website and learn how to code there and what they have for developer tooling, and it just doesn't exist, right? And Ethereum's and all of these aspects kind of blows it away. And like you said, this is stuff you and I have been talking about forever. And, you know, we're not developers, we're not coders, but we can see this happening, right? Like, it's just, it makes sense that if you have such a huge start and such a large community, you're going to build these tools out. So, you know, I always kind of chuckle when people just think that competition comes along and, oh yeah, they have really cool tech, they're going to win. That's just not the case. And I think we're starting to see that. And I really don't expect that to change at any time in the near future.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always said that if I actually see this starting to change and Ethereum losing its network effects, I'm not just going to jump ship to something else. I'm going to work as hard as I can to, you know, bring those network effects or bring those people back to Ethereum or improve Ethereum as much as I can. It's just, it's so hard. Like, I think people really do underestimate how hard it is to get a community going, especially for something as niche as this. There's only like, I mean, if I had to put a number on it, there's probably a few hundred thousand people in crypto in general. There's definitely less than 1,000 that are actually considered, maybe a couple of thousand, I guess, that are actually considered big names within the kind of crypto industry or something like that. This community is so, so small, and you have such a small pool of talent to pull from that getting network effects for your smart contract blockchain this early in the game, when we've already got Ethereum, is going to be incredibly hard. So not to say that any of the, you know, other projects aren't great. Like, I know that we both probably give Polkadot a lot of shit on Twitter, but I actually do like Polkadot, and I do respect Parity and their entire team and the engineering team there. And I do think they put out some really, really great products and services. But for me saying that Polkadot's not going to get the network effects of Ethereum is not ragging on Polkadot. It's just kind of thinking logically where, you know, I just think that they're too far behind at this point. It's going to take them a very long time to get anyone to build on their platform, sort of thing. Because we've already seen this with other chains. Like EOS and Tron appeal to a different market. They're not even trying in the West. They went straight to Asia because they figured that they can probably get more market share in Asia. I mean, obviously Tron was born out of China, so that's where they're starting. But even in those communities, I've seen that Ethereum still has a very strong foothold, especially in places like Japan and even something like Singapore. So yeah, we'll see how it evolves. Like, I don't expect anything to come close to Ethereum for at least a few years, because obviously these other chains have some war chests that have let them live for a while. Like EOS has $4 billion or whatever it was. Tron has a lot because they managed to pump up their token to a pretty high valuation. We have Polkadot obviously coming online, Tezos, Cosmos, all these sorts of things. They might just end up fighting with each other for what's left of the kind of Ethereum, not detractors, the people who don't want to build on Ethereum, whereas Ethereum just gets all the good talent. So, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens. I think we've gone a bit over time on the podcast here, but yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing. We were talking about Felix. He's the CEO of Set Protocol, which we're both huge fans of, and one of my favorite DeFi projects. And we hope to have them on the podcast soon for sure. But everyone should go check out their token set stuff. It's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, if you want to follow Felix, you can go to @Felix2, the number 2, Feng on Twitter. Or you can just go see the thread in the newsletter. But yeah, so I think that's it for this week, everyone. We've gone a bit over time there. Thank you for listening. Hope that some of our listeners actually were in ETH New York or in New York in general for Blockchain Week. I hope you guys had fun there. Hope to see some of you at future events. But yeah, so if you want to check out the newsletter and all our previous podcasts, just simply go to ethhub.substack.com. If you haven't subscribed, don't forget to subscribe yet, and we'll catch you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Into the Ether podcast.